established 200 years ago in the city near, but it was a different type of yeshiva at that time. In recent years, the Alta from Slabodka, whose name was Nassim Zvifinkel, educated his son, Ablazer Yudelfinkel. He learned at different yeshivas, by different gedolim, he picked up different styles of learning, and later on, he founded, he went to Mir and became the Rosh Yeshiva in Mir. He was the Rosh Yeshiva through the Second World War. And after the war, he is the one who went with the Talmidim, half of the Talmidim went to America. And they started the Beis HaTalmud and the Mir Yeshiva in Brooklyn, which is, the Mir Yeshiva in Brooklyn is not exactly like the Mir Yeshiva in Yerushalayim. Then the Mir Yeshiva in Yerushalayim was really a carryover. And the Mir Yeshiva in Europe, in Shanghai, Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, was a son-in-law of Rav Blazer Yudelfinkel. And he gave shiurim from a very young age. He had learned perhaps in Chicago, in Europe, and he learned the Mir Yeshiva, and then he gave shiurim to the Talmidim when they were in Shanghai all of those years. Rabbeinu Yudel had a few children, so one of his sons was Rabbeinu Shvinkel. He had only daughters, so one of his sons-in-law, all of the sons-in-law are Talmidei Chachamim. So one of his sons-in-law was Rabbi Nassim Zvifinkel, who was a descendant of the original Rabbi Nassim Zvifinkel. So he was the Rosh Yeshiva in Yerushalayim, in the Mir Yeshiva in Yerushalayim. For the last few years, he just passed away about 2 years ago. And the Mir Yeshiva in Europe was at its peak. They had the maximum about 400 Talmidim, and they said they were really from 400 different cities. All of the children went to Cheder locally. After Bar Mitzvah, they all went to work. And very few would continue to learn. It's not like today that all the families send their children to the yeshiva till they get married. If the yeshiva would only accept one Talmud from any one given city, otherwise they wouldn't give a chance to the Talmud from other cities to enter. Unless it would be a big city, like my father-in-law came from Pinsk, which was a bigger city. So he said there were two Talmidim from Pinsk. My father-in-law was there. And Rabbi Avigdor Zipperstein, who after the war functioned as a Rebbe in YU, off and on, and as a chief rabbi of Argentina under Juan Perón. The last years in the Mir Yeshiva in Europe, before the war, through the war, in Shanghai, they had the two mashgichim, when Rav Blazer Yudel, the son of the Alta von Slabodka, when he became the Rosh Yeshiva Mir Yeshiva, so the whole nature of the yeshiva changed, and it became a Musa yeshiva. Emphasis was placed on Musa. Talmidei Chachamim sometimes are geniuses, and sometimes because they're geniuses, they hold a lot from themselves. Sometimes because a genius is an Eloi. An Eloi is always known as an Alba Meshuvinim. So there's an Eloi from this city, Eloi from that city. And each one acts differently. While under the two Mashgichim, before the war, first they had Rabbi Yeruch from Lubavitz, was Mashgiach for quite a while, and after he passed away, then they called upon Rabbi Chatzka Levenstein to come back from Eretz Yisrael. He had already gone to Eretz Yisrael. He was Mashgiach in Petach Tikva Yeshiva. He came back to Europe to be the Mashgiach and the Mir Yeshiva after Rabbi Yeruchim passed away. We were mentioning the other day Rabbi Chatzka Levenstein, end of his life, lived in Bnei Brak. And he had two daughters who were married to two sisters who were married to two brothers. The Rosh Yeshiva, the top Rosh Yeshiva in Brooklyn and the Mir Yeshiva, was Rav Mordechai Ginsburg, Rav Mordechai Ginsburg for many years. And after he passed away, then Rav Shmuel Birnbaum became the Rosh Yeshiva in Brooklyn. So Rav Shmuel Birnbaum was his son-in-law, Rav Mordechai, I think. So Rav Mordechai Ginsburg's brother, Reuven Ginsburg, marry the other daughter of Rabbi. The two brothers married two sisters. It was interesting when the Miri Yeshiva was in Japan.
Finkel sisters? Which sisters they were?
No, the two daughters of Rav Chaska Levenstein married two brothers, Ginsberg. Rav Reuven Ginsberg lived in Bnei Brak, and he took care of the father-in-law of the Seif Yama. Rav Motel Ginsberg was the head of the Yeshiva in Brooklyn. The two brothers married two sisters. Daiswis and Yavamas quotes from the Rav Yudah Chassid and the Sefer Chassidim that it's not proper. It was such an attitude, but it was not accepted. It's not proper for two brothers to marry two sisters because Mavatl Mitzvah Yavam. In case one of the brothers should die leaving no children, then the other brother won't be able to do Yibum Machalitza. He won't be able to fulfill either Mitzvah Yibum Machalitza because the sister is Achres Ishtay. So when there's an Erebus, there's no Yibum, there's no Chalitza, there's nothing. Tyson's quotes such an opinion. That's from the Sefer Hasidim, that it's not proper for two brothers to marry two sisters. Tyson says that it's not correct. You see, from the Mishnah, he said it's not so. The Mishnah, he said, the Imam is talking about Shnei Acham HaShayim Nisuvim Shnei Achoyas. Mishnah talks about two brothers married to two sisters. Mavatl Mitzvah Yivamin is only if the brother died already and the mitzvah of Yivam HaChalitza set in. Then the surviving brother is not allowed to do something to pot himself from fulfilling the mitzvah. But to marry two sisters, that was never really a problem. Rav Chaska Levenstein had learned by Rav Yerucham. He himself learned in the Talmud of his in Musi, and he was Mashgiach in Eretz Yisrael and Petach Tikva Yeshiva. So he went back after Rav Yerucham passed away. He went back to Europe. So then when they had a runaway from the Nazis, this miraculous Nesa HaTzolot. They went on the Transcontinental Railroad to Vladivostok, and the whole fantastic story is stranger than fiction. It's hard to believe the whole story. So when they were in Japan, there was a shaila where the dateline is, whether Shabbos should be observed on Shabbos or on Sunday. Is Japan the first place in the world to have Shabbos or the last place in the world? So when the Rabbanim from Eretz Yisrael sent a telegram, Rav Herzog got a meeting at his home, and all of the Rabbanim said that they're observing Shabbos on the right day, and the Chazon Ish sent a telegram otherwise. So it was like a 23 Rabbanim against one. Rav Chaska Levenstein said, I was in Eretz Yisrael for a couple of years, I met the Chazon Ish in person, I know him, we should follow the Chazon Ish. He's stronger in learning than all of the 23 put together. But the last years in the Miri Yeshiva, under Rabbi Ruchem and under Rabbi Chaska Levenstein, the main influence was really from the Mashgiach as opposed from the Magid Eshia. The learning was really on their own. Magid Eshia gave a little bit of Hadrocha learning. Not like in America for many years, the learning revolved in many yeshivas. The learning revolved around the shiurim. I know I learned by Rav Soloveitchik, so he only gave for quite a few years. He only gave two shiurim a week on Tuesday and Wednesday. He used to come in from Boston on Tuesday morning, gave a shiur for 2 hours. On Wednesday morning, he gave a shiur for 2 hours, and he went back to Boston. He kept us busy all week long. He told us what to prepare for next week. We had to review what he said this week and prepare for next week. That kept us busy all day and all night. We were busy. The whole learning revolved about the shiur. In Europe, in the yeshivas, most of the yeshivas it was answered by Rav Shimnitzkop. It was. Shimnitzkop gave the two shiurim a week. Each year was 2.5 hours. And the boys prepared and the chazan. The whole learning revolved about the shiur because he said so much. But in the Miri Yeshiva, the main influence the last years under the two Mashgiach was really from the Mashgiach. And they really worked on the midas of the Talmidim that they should remain the Iluyim, build the Iluyim, and each one with his own genius and his own build kind. They should all become Shleimim. That was the effect of their Musa movement. That was Rabbi Saul Salanter's comment we mentioned the other day, that the from the three most outstanding Talmidim, Rabbi Saul Salanter, Yitzhak Blaser was the strongest in learning, and he was recognized. He published the Sefer Sharas Shumas Pri Yitzchak, very strong in learning. People are tainous there, tarumas against Rabbi Saul Salanter. Why did he get Rabbi Petterburger involved in Musar? Should have let him learn the whole time, it would have become a greater Goyen. He was one of the greatest Goyenim of his time. Could have become a greater Goyen. So Salanter responded, I mentioned the other day, he responded with the mashal, that if you're in the middle of the week, you have an option of saying Hamoitzi either on a small roll or on a big prusa, a big leftover challah from Shabbos, let's say. And the big thing, the big prusa, half of the challah, is five times as big as a little roll. So the halacha says that the shlema takes precedence over the gedolah. So that was Rabbi Saul Salanter's argument. You see that shlemus is more important than gadlus. Not exactly, shlema over here is not the same as over there, and gadlus over here is not the same as gadlus over there. But that was his vertel. That shlemus is more important than gadlus. So that was the hashpah, that was the effect that the mashgichim had on the talmidim. They all became those who were under the, most of the Talmidim were under the influence of the Mashgiach to one extent or another. Some of them didn't, some of the Talmidim Beersheba were not influenced by the Mashgiach. There were some who remained the Iluyim throughout, and they were not affected by the Musa. But those who were affected, you can see that Mamashle, they were like carbon copies of the Rebbe. They dressed nicely, they spoke nicely with their chereds. It was a different kind of, the yeshiva changed. Under Blazer Yudel, he became Rosh Hashiva, and the era changes. It's not really fair that they were celebrating the 200th anniversary of the founding of the yeshiva. It was a different yeshiva. After the Alta from Slabodka sent his son, Rabbi Blazer Yudel, he took over. The whole nature of the yeshiva changed. It's a different yeshiva. The practice was that they would learn from brachas to nidah in order. They gave shiurim on brachas, then on Shabbos, then on Erev, and then on Pesachim. They didn't have this hang-up that single boys should learn noshim and so on. You don't give a shiur on hilchos avelos. They went straight. This started from Slabodka. This was the influence of Slabodka and all the other yeshivas, that they only concentrated on the seven mesichtos. We have Rav Baruch Be'er Shiurim, it's just on Bava Kama, Bava Tziyah, Bava Basra, Ksubas, and Yivamas, and Gitni Kiddush. Everything else they learned on their own, the same was by in Radin as well. The official Shiurim were only on the seven Mesichtas, and everything else they learned on their own. I remember there was a discussion once in Yeshiva University whether the Rabbeim should introduce Shiurim on Shulchan Aruch, Mishnah Berurah, and in Chumash, Parshas HaShavua. So the students were rioting at one time that they should change the Seder HaLimud, they should introduce Chumash and Mishnah Berurah. And some of the Rabbein, we still had a lot of European Rabbein, said, no, that's not the Seder HaYeshiva. So Dr. Belkin felt that this was such a serious issue. He requested of Rav Mendel Zaks that he was still in America and still connected with the yeshiva. He asked them to please come to the meeting. Usually Rav Mendel didn't come to the meetings of the Rabbi. So Rav Mendel came to the meeting and the Rabbi were arguing back and forth. Should introduce Chumash and Dinah, should not introduce. So then Dr. Dalton said that's what he asked. He felt that this is going to affect all the yeshivas in America. What happens in YU can have a ripple effect on all the yeshivas. Yes, Rav Mendel, what is his opinion? So Rav Mendel was very soft-spoken, in very few words. He just said two or three sentences. He says, in Radin, there was no television, and there was no basketball, there were no movies, so there was no diversion. So whatever was not covered in the shiur was only on the seven mesichtas. Whatever wasn't covered in the shiur, the boys learned on their own. So the mothers said on their own. They would learn Tanakh on their own. They would learn the other Masechtas on their own. And Mishneh Berurah, they learned on their own. There was no Shir in Mishneh Berurah. But he said, in America, whatever the Rebbe doesn't teach them, they're just not going to learn. So he really encouraged that they should introduce. So after Kamel only said three sentences, that's all. Whatever we're not going to teach them, they won't know. And that's all. So then after he finished speaking for 2 minutes, so the Rebbe continued to argue out the case. Then most of the rabbis didn't care what he said. They just debated the issue. So some of them did introduce in their classes Shir on Parsha and Shir on Mishneh Berurah. And others felt not. Some of the Europeans, some of the Americans, who acted as if they're Europeans, they said, no, they have to carry on the tradition, only to give the Shir on the seven Masechtas, not to give a Shir on Kodesh, not to give a Shir on Tehillim. But that was the major difference between Slobodka and Volozhin. And YU was really originally a carryover from Volozhin. It was a combination of the two yeshivas, Eitz Chaim, Yeshivas Eitz Chaim, and Eitz Chaim was named after Volozhin. It was officially a carryover of Volozhin yeshiva. Rav Moshe Soloveitchik was a rabbi in the little village Chaslavich. I don't know if that's on the map either.
Chaslavich.
It's near here?
No, it's far away.
So he had learned...
next to Smolensk, in Russia.
Oh. So he had learned by his father, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik. So the Alta von Slobodka sent a group of Talmidim to learn by him. Because he had what to give over. He had a lot of divrei Torah to share with him. So here, after Rav Chaim Soloveitchik passed away, Rav Elvava Soloveitchik took over the Rabbonus of Brisk. So he happened to have around his dining room table, he had a long table, and he had 11 empty spaces. There was room to place 11 chairs. So he offered that he would take the 11 Litzionim from different yeshivas and give shiurim for them. So they had a quota system. They had some came from Radin. Radin was a small yeshiva. Some came from Slobodka. Some came from Nir. So every year there was a sachakol, some total of 11 litzionim who would come to learn for Rav Elvava Soloveitchik. He only gave the shiurim on in Yoni Kotchin. He only gave on Zochim, on Menaches, on Taris. He gave on Mishnayis Parah, and so on. And the Talmidim Derech Chlal usually only learned there for 1 year, and then they went back to their own yeshiva. Remember, Rabbi Gerelik told us that he started dating a girl in Brisk, and he was lucky she didn't agree to marry him. So he finagled to stay a second year in order to complete the shidduch. So he was one of the lucky ones. He learned Baradava for 2 years. Those who learned more than 1 year Baradava, usually because they lived in Brisk, because they were born and they were bred at Brisk. Those who came from the yeshivas usually only learned 1 year. They already picked up a style of learning, an approach, how to analyze any Gemara in a certain way. Gina says that this exit is to Machit, where the Machit the Ely came from. He learned by Rav Chaim Soloveitchik in Brisk. The Sefer Yom Tov he taught in Yeshiva College, New York.
No. You got it.
We are traveling to Slonim. There were 4 Slonim Rebbes before the war. The first one was the founder of the Hasidus, Rav Avram. The second one was his grandson, Shmuel, who was one of the major founders of the Agudas Yisrael. The third Slonim Rebbe was the son of Rav Avram, the son of the second, who was named after the first. He was Rav Avram. And he moved from Bialystok to Baranovich. It was during his period that the Slonim Hasidus was the most glorious. And He was, because he moved to Baranovich, so he was very close to Rabbi Chanan, and Mele, he was very close to Rabbi Chaim Weizen as well, the brother-in-law of Rabbi Chanan. And the fourth one, who was his son, was killed by the Nazis. He was the one who went there to Israel and founded the Beis Avraham Yeshiva there, named after the first Slonim Rebbe. And he used to travel golus. He used to travel around and shnara money for aniye Eretz Yisrael. And Chassidim felt that it wasn't lefi chvoidoi that the Rebbe should schlepzach around from village to village to collect pennies. So they pleaded with him that they'll get wealthy people to give money. How much money does he think he's going to raise already? So they'll donate that amount of money. You shouldn't travel around. So he said no. Mara has a concept that the Shechina is in Golus, Shechinta beGolusa. So he felt that it's not proper that the Avodim of the Shechina, we, should not be in Golus also. So that's why he felt he has to travel Golus. He got married at the age of 20 and was killed by the Nazis at the age of 30. The Chassidim wanted to save him, he was killed in 1943. The Chassidim wanted to smuggle him out of danger, and he refused to leave his flock. He wanted to stay together with everybody else. And they killed him, and they say like many other tzaddikim, before he was killed by the Nazis, prepared himself to die on Kiddush Hashem, and they all felt that they're like a korban, and they have to have proper machshavas to retire their machshavas, and machshavas psul with pasul the korban. Now this was a big chiddush, the Hasidus that was founded in Lithuania, because the Litvish Jews were known for learning. All of the Jews in Lithuania were more learned, I think that's what they say, were more learned than the others. They wouldn't go for plain old Hasidus, because Hasidus was basically for the masses, Rachmana Livakoi, for the Poshita people. Somehow the Slonim HaChassidus is different from the others, I don't know exactly what. And the Sfarim that were written by the Slonim HaRebbe, the Beis Avraham, became very popular. Now the Sfarim by the other Slonim HaRebbe, the previous one, are very popular. Moshe Feinstein learned for a short period of time in the yeshiva in Kobrin by a Pesach Pruskin, I think was he quotes him in his Sefer on Bava Metzia, but most of his learning he did on his own, not from the yeshiva. By the city Novardek before, the road to Novardek. Novardek always had, over the years, they had very prominent rabbanim. During the lifetime of Rav Chaim Volozhiner, early 1800s, they had a prominent rabbi, Rav David Novardek, who wrote a sefer that Shabbos Shachuv is Galya Masechta. The Gemara says in Eridan, commenting on the pasuk in Noach, he David Ochol Derachov Maskil. David HaMelech was very successful in what area? The Gemara says he was a Magid Shir and he was successful in giving shiurim. The pasuk describes Shaul HaMelech, by Shaul Ochol Derachov Marshia. So the Gemara interprets Marshia doesn't mean he was evil and wicked, it means he was not so successful, not as successful as David. Giving the public shiur. Why was David so successful as opposed to Shaul? So the Gemara says, because when David gave a shiur, it was Galya Masechta. And when Shaul gave the shiur, it was not Galya Masechta. What does it mean it was Galya Masechta? It's very unclear. So the Meiri interprets on that Gemara in the middle of Eret, Meiri interprets. When David gave the shiur, he announced in advance all the Marmikainis. And the Talmidim prepared. So when he gave the Shia, they were able to ask Kashis. And after they asked all the Kashis, and David explained how what he has to say that's in the proper perspective with what they knew from before, everything worked out, all the details worked out. So that was good. And Shaul never told them in advance what the marmakamas were. And that's why Shaul was not as successful. So this rabbi in Navardik, during the lifetime of Rav Chaim Volozhin, Abdovid of Navardik, I don't think he had a last name, I don't know. So he called the name of his sefer Galya Masechta, because he was Dovid, and he thought that his tshuvas were gevaldik. He writes in one of his tshuvas, when he dies and he goes to the Olam HaEmes, the Rambam will come and give him a big yashikayach, because he was the first one to give the true pshat in a difficult Rambam in Hilchos Sainor. Perek HaZohar, then both would say the Pisri Tshuva and Chashem Mishpat, both that Galya Masechta. Galya Masechta, the second half of his volume, is a collection of drushes and hespedim. So among the various hespedim, he has a hesped on Rav Chaim Volozhin. So years before Rav Chaim Volozhin passed away, he felt a little hurt. He felt as if Rav Chaim Volozhin had slighted him. And he had tarumas against Rav Chaim Volozhin. As the years went by, he realized that he was mistaken in his judgment, and he gained great, tremendous respect for Rav Chaim Volozhin. So when Rav Chaim Volozhin passed away, he gave a hesped. So he writes up part of what he said in the hesped. He starts off by asking Akasha. Mara tells us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mamalish Naseim Shel Tzadikim Biyom Biyom, based on the Pasuk in Chumash, es mist b'yamecha amalei. And it turns out that when Rav Chaim Volozhin passed away, everybody knew that he died a week after his birthday. So this poses a kasha. Everybody knows Rav Chaim Volozhin was such a holy tzaddik, so shouldn't he have died on his birthday? Because the Gemara says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mamalish Naseim Shel Tzadikim Biyom Biyom, how come he died a week after his birthday? So he suggests, Moshe Rabbeinu was born on Zayin Adar and he died on Zayin Adar. So how come Rav Chaim Volozhin died a week after? Means he's not a tzaddik. So he quoted the answer, this kasha in the Hesped. He quoted the Gemara in Perek Chelek, and the last Perek in Sanhedrin. The Gemara says, if Chalila, the little baby, dies, how old does the baby have to reach that he should be zecha to Olam Haba? So one opinion is, when he's born, he dies 2 days after he's born, he goes to Olam Haba. One opinion is, he has to wait till he's old enough to answer Amen to the brachas that other people will say significantly later. You should understand what a bracha is and to say Amen. So the pasuk speaks about Shomer Emunim. So the Gemara has a pun, a play on words, Shema Amen. When the child is old enough to answer Amen, he answers Amen, then he goes to Olam Haba. Then the third opinion of the Gemara is after the Bris Mila. He dies without ever getting a Bris Mila, then he doesn't go to Olam Haba. That he survives till the eighth day and he gets a bris, then if he dies after that, then he goes to Olam Haba. So David Navarika said, he assumes that we paskal halacha, I don't know what that means. He assumed that the baby goes to Olam Haba if he had a bris mila. Chaim Volozhin died liyom liyom, the week after his birthday, the day of his bris mila. Aye, but it says Moshe Rabbeinu was born on Zayin Adar and died on Zayin Adar. Why didn't he die a week later? The answer is that the Pasuk says when Moshe Rabbeinu was born, he was not allowed mahu, Rashi HaChumash quotes. So he didn't have to wait till 8 days later to have a bris. So by us, it would sound like a joke. The whole kasha, but the whole parents. And he was delivering the hesped to people who believed in every Maimah Chazal. Everything is taken kipshuto. That's the beginning of his hesped, Rav Chaim Volozhin. Many years later, Doruch HaShulchan had a Rabbonis in the Varda. And Rabbi Cheskel Abramsky was a teenager. There was a yeshiva in the Varda, one of the Musa yeshivas. The Musa of the Varda was the opposite from the Musa in Slobodka. In Slobodka, they emphasized that God Musa Adam, they exaggerated how important human beings are, and therefore we should dress very properly and speak very properly and act very properly. The man is so great, greater than the malachim. And in the Vardik, they used to emphasize the shiflus ha'adam, the And then Mohanash Kisis Kirena Venabdab Kisid Kedena, they're Psukim and Tanakh that speak about Godless Adam and Shiflus Adam. So the Vardic, they used to emphasize Shiflus Adam. The man is a garnish, the man is nothing, with an exaggeration. In Slabotka, they used to emphasize the Godless Adam. And Moshe Feinstein never learned in Slabotka, but he picked up, told his family, he picked up a little bit from Slabotka to dress neatly. That's why in the earlier years, when he used to wear an Abercrombie under his shirt, and the lady years, he wore Abercrombie on top of his shirt, because I think the wool used to annoy him. But in the earlier years, when he wore the Abercrombie on his shirt, he did not have the tzitzis sticking out, and he picked it up from Slabotka. He said, Slabotka, they always dressed neatly, because Godless Adams, they have to dress nicely with a suit, with a hat, with a tie, with a jacket. Everything has to be just so. So Rabbi Gaspar Abramsky was a teenager. And there was a meshulach who was trying to recruit students to come learn in the Vardika Yeshiva. And he was convincing Rabbi Gaspar Abramsky should learn there. He didn't, Rabbi Gaspar Abramsky as a teenager didn't realize that that was the fellow's job. He thought that it was just Messiah Lefi Tuma. He's telling how great the yeshiva was in the Vardik. So he went to learn. As a teenager, he went to learn in the Vardik. Apparently, the base medrash was so packed, so he wasn't able to learn in the base medrash with everybody else. He used to learn in the shul. He used to tell over in later years, because the Abramsky used to tell over, that the Orach HaShulchan used to be the Rav. And he sat in the shul all day long, in case people had shilas. He would sit and write and write and write. He was writing his Orach HaShulchan. He would write and write and write, and once in a long while he had to look something up at a Gemara and a Rama, but otherwise he would just sit and write from memory. He felt that everything was so clear in his mind. Every so often there's a passage in the Orach HaShulchan that doesn't exactly correspond to what it says in the Gemara. We understand why. He was sitting and writing from memory. Before the Orach HaShulchan was wrote there, so the in the end of his life, he was the rabbi in Kovna. That was the major position. But he was rough in other communities before. So one of the communities was in the Varna. That was a stepping stone to become the big rabbi in Kovna later. Gaskal Abramsky picked up the practice from the Vardik. Always be Mekabel Shabbos early. I remember I knew an old man who was drafted into the Russian army, I guess, I don't know. And when the soldiers were drafted into the army, they had to be sworn in by a clergyman of their faith. So he told me he was sworn in to the Russian army, I guess, by the Beis Halevi. That was Rabbi Yosef Beis Soloveitchik, the father of Rabbi Chaim Soloveitchik. So this Balabas must have been in his late 80s when I knew him. I knew him before my bar mitzvah. He only wanted to meet Rabbi Soloveitchik because he was sworn into the army by his namesake, by Rabbi Yosef Beis Soloveitchik from so many years before. So he asked me to ask Rabbi Soloveitchik. So I asked Rabbi Soloveitchik, he said, don't pester me. I really met 100 people who were sworn in by the Beis Soloveitchik. He wasn't interested. So this Balabas told me that when He remembered when the Orach HaShulchan came to Navarik, he became rabbi. So on Friday evening, they davened mincha in the big shul, and then there were Kabbal Shabbos, and they davened ma'ariv. So the farmers would work all day long, probably in the winter time. Farmers would work all day long, and then they would come home late in the afternoon, and they would wash up for Kovet Shabbos, and they would come to shul late. A lot of times, some of them would be Mechal Shabbos when they would be taking their bath for Kovet Shabbos. They would be Mechal Shabbos. They would be washing up after the Shkia. They would come to shul late. So the Orach HaShulchan was very upset about that. So soon after he arrived in the community, he realized that so many of them were farmers. This is terrible. Chil Shabbos. So he made an announcement that they're going to be Mekabel Shabbos early. Next week, everybody has to come to shul early. He said what time they're going to dab mincha early, and have Kabbalah Shabbos, then they're going to dab ma'ariv. So the next Shabbos, most of the people came early, and then all all the farmers came late, but it was still way before the Shkia. Farmers came late. And they had a whole minyan. So after everybody finished Ma'ariv, the farmers were going to make a second minyan for Mincha. So Doruch HaShulchan got up on the bima, and he made a clap, and he said, no second minyan in the big shul. Everybody has to daven b'yechidus. And he broke their minyan. He broke their practice. Not a minyan. He broke their practice of coming to shul late. And he introduced that summer and winter, they should always be in Kabbalah Shabbos early. So years later, after the Rosh Hashulchan introduced it, when Rabbi Yecheskel Abramsky was a Talmud in the yeshiva there in the Vardik, he used to learn in the shul, so he picked up that practice of being Mekabel Shabbos early, summer and winter, in Mekabel Shabbos by the Plaga Mincha. Most of his life he was able to do that. There were a couple of years that it wasn't possible. I think during the war years, not sure exactly when, he was in England during the war. But most of his life, he had that practice. This Baal HaBos told me that he was there when Aruch HaShulchan introduced that practice. In the history books, if they write Taitzah, they write that it was introduced by Rav David Novartik. That was a century earlier. So they always had very prominent Rabbanim in Novartik.
Which practice they introduced?
Practice of accepting Shabbos early, early. An hour and a quarter before sunset on Friday. Yeah, we did. We accepted Shabbos very early because you gotta wait till the Shkia. You won't begin Shabbos till 10 o'clock.
Why?
I can understand why in the summertime it makes good sense.
Rabbi, tell them that in 2 kilometers it will be Slonim side. Tell them.
In 2 kilometers, Slonim will be on this side. It means we're going to turn off the road. Yeah.
Okay. No, we already took the exit, so the sign for Slonim will be very soon.
Oh, the sign will soon be there, so have your cameras ready. Yeruchim Shmuis is, that's what Rav Soloveitchik wrote in one of his published essays. He didn't exaggerate the Shiflus Adam, he didn't exaggerate Godless Adam. He just spoke about how to act like a mensch. You don't have to exaggerate to the one direction or the other, not like the Slavotki exaggerated Godless Adam, not like the Navardika emphasized the Shiflus Adam. That's what Rav Soloveitchik said. After Rav Yerucham changed the whole style of the Musar, he gave Hashkafa talks, Hashkafa Emunah. So then there's no longer any machlekes about the Musar movement, because there's no exaggeration. That's what the Chazon Ish was attacking. He didn't like either of the brands of the Musar, because they were both an exaggeration. And he personally he writes in one of the collected letters of the Chazon Ish, he personally was very befriended by Rabbi Yerucham. He refers to him as the Alta for Mir, Asava Mimir. He's not usually called like that, but that's the expression that the Chazon Ish writes. Chazon Ish is known, he had his own style Hebrew. A very unusual, beautiful style of Hebrew. One of the very prominent rabbis who lived in Slonim was Rabbi Zalcharif. Regina says that she knows a man who lives in Vilna who says that he's a descendant of Rabbi Zalcharif, and he says he can draw his ancestry all the way back till David HaMelech. This Rabbi Zalcharif was very, very learned. His unique learning was that he knew Yerushalmi also. He was a contemporary of Rabbi Chaim Soloveitchik. So all the rabbanim knew the Bavli. His unique shtick was that he knew Yerushalmi. He wrote a whole commentary on Yerushalmi, Noyam Yerushalmi, and he's famous for his Shabbos Hatshuvos Emek Yehoshua. one of the famous tshuvas that he has there, and he has a lot of drush also. He has drushes, has his own style of drush. One of the famous tshuvas that he has is this hashar that comes up every so often. A man is married and he dies and he leaves no children, and the almana is 85 years old. She's not interested in remarrying. So she's still supposed to, is she still supposed to go through with chalitza? Is chalitza only necessary if she's interested in remarrying? But she's so old, she has no desire to remarry. There's no need for chalitza. Should we assume that chalitza is a mitzvah? So he quotes a Tosfos in the end of Maseches Nida, where Tosfos has a klal. He's the one who pointed it out first, and then Tziv also has like this. So he points out, Tosfos says that it doesn't make sense on the level of the Raisa to say, L'chatchili should do like this, and b'di'evet it's good if you did it like that, like we were discussing. L'chatchili really shouldn't use a cup for hot coffee. We mentioned earlier the Rabbi Zalcharev has one of his more famous truths. It's about chalitza, so he quotes a Tosfos who has this klal that it, on the level of a din de'araisa, it doesn't make sense to have a difference between l'chatchili and b'di'evet. When you're talking about a mitzvah, so you say l'chatchil you should do the mitzvah b'shleimusa tchelus with lavan, and if you have tzitzis with lavan without tchelus, so you have to the mitzvah shalom b'shleimusa. L'chatchil Tosfos gives the example: you should be zorek the dam of a korban chatas on the four corners of the mizbeach, and b'di'evet we pass on like Beis Hillel that if you do one zrikas adam on one corner, b'di'evet you have to the mitzvah shalom b'shleimusa. L'chatchil you should do chalitza with kriyas apsukim and with rikike, and b'di'evet the rikike is not miyakim and the kriyas apsukim is not miyakim, just the chalitza sasan. So that's because you're dealing with a mitzvah. But let's say a get. Well, you say chatchila the get should be written like this, and b'di'evet will be kosher even without that. There's no mitzvah to say that you did the mitzvah b'shleimusa, you fulfilled the mitzvah shalom b'shleimusa, you get a bigger piece of lav yosin, get a smaller piece of lav yosin, you don't get any lav yosin for giving a get. It's not a mitzvah at all, it's only a matir. So whenever you have a din l'chatchila and b'di'evet and kashrus, so then it's clearly only a din midirabban. You have a l'chatchila and b'di'evet and a get, it's only a din midirabban. So the fact that by chalitza, Tosfos says the fact that by chalitza there's a l'chatchila to do rikika with kriyas hapsukim and b'di'evet the chalitza is good without it, is a clear indication chalitza is a mitzvah. So it's a mitzvah even if she's not interested in remarrying. Other achrayim disagree. Other gedolim before Rabbi Zalcharev disagree. They say no, maybe it is a mitzvah, but the mitzvah only applies if and when the woman is interested in remarrying. Then there's a mitzvah to undergo chalitza. Not interested in remarrying, then there is no mitzvah. But this is one of the tshuvas that he's known for. He drew attention to that Tosfos in the end of Maseches Nida. Rav Soloveitchik used to tell over a story that when the Rabbanim of Poland used to gather together to discuss political issues, so they would always start off with Divrei Torah. So on one occasion, Rabbi Zalcharev started off with Divrei Torah. He said when he dies and he goes to Achamei, yes, Mishana will go to the Olam HaEmes, he will bring the Nari Behuda to a Din Torah. Because the Nari Behuda has in the collection of tshuvas, he has a tshuva that he sent to the Sephardish rabbi, who was known as the Becher David, the rabbi in Constantinople. So he writes, Harav HaGoyen, he writes very flowery introduction to this rabbi in Constantinople, who was the author of the Shana. So tshuva sefer, Divrei Emes. So Rabbi Zalcharev thought that if the Nari Behuda praises the rabbi so much, it's probably worthwhile to buy the sefer that the rabbi wrote. And the Nari Behuda mentions, author of the Baal HaMechaber, author of the sefer, Divrei Emes, he saved up a lot of money, and it cost him 5 rubles, apparently it was a lot of money. He spent 5 rubles to buy this sefer. So he said when he comes to the Olam HaEmes, he's going to bring the Nari Behuda to a Din Torah. Why he wasted my 5 rubles? I bought the sefer, and it's worthless, because the Sfardim usually write Shabbos and Tshuvas. They just collect all the different opinions. They don't say anything original. They just collect Marmukam. It's a bekiyas, an essay. That's the standard for many years. That was the Sfardish style. Chacham Avadya had a lot of that also, but he had original also. But so he says the Divrei Emes is worthless. So he's going to sit in Nadiv Yehuda. He wasted my 5 rubles. So Rabbi Soloveitchik was there. So he asked Rabbi Zulcharev, really? You feel that the Sefer is worthless? What do you say? Those Eidecha Demen B'Yisurim apply to women. A woman is not kosher le'edus and mamanus and nefashus of Dovah Shebiyera. What about in kashrus? They said, of course it applies. Eidecha Demen B'Yisurim, you come home and your wife gives you supper or your mother gives you supper. So you believe what she says, that the food that she's serving you is kosher? So Rabbi Chaim Soloveitchik said that the Sefer Divrei Emes is worth the 5 rubles for that one essay alone, that the Divrei Emes quotes is not original. It quotes a whole group of Rishonim who say that Eidecha Demen B'Yisurim doesn't apply to women. The only thing is, if you know your wife, that she's a very religious girl, that you know your mother is a very religious woman, so we assume that she wouldn't feed you non-kosher food. That's not based on Eidecha Demen B'Yisurim, that's based on a different principle. Chazokah means Aruba Deleisa Kamon, Chazokah Al Chavir. A person who's religious wouldn't leave any non-kosher food around the house because he wouldn't want to be machshel anybody. So this is Rav Soloveitchik's story about Rabbi Zulcharev. I don't know if Charev was the name of the family or that's the nickname that the people gave him.
He was sharp, no?
I think it was a nickname that they gave. I don't think that was the family name. They tell a sharp story about him that the people in the community were complaining that the milkman used to water down the milk much more than was legally permitted, and he should try to get them to stop. So, and the milkman denied it. They said it's not true. They sell the milk exactly the way it comes out of the cow. So he had to figure out how to catch them in a lie. So he, once on a Matzoi Shabbos, he called in the milkman, urgent, he has a serious shaila. The kehillah organized a malava malka, and it was fleishig. And accidentally some milk fell into the flesh that they were cooking, and he has to know exactly what percentage of milk, water they pour into the milk to be able to calculate the shishim. So he told them, Rebbe, don't worry, shishim do shishim. For sure the shishim. So that's when he gave him over the head, and he said, gazlanim. You're telling the Baal, you're selling the milk and charging the Balabatim for regular milk, and you dilute it so much that it's Shesheg Do Shishi. They have a lot of famous stories by Rabbi Zulcharev about his pikchis. He was a rabbi in Slonim. He's known as Rabbi Zul Slonim. I don't know if he's buried in the cemetery. It could be that he died somewhere else. The Yavis stuck over the years also had prominent rabbis. One of the famous rabbis in Bialystok was the Oynig Yontif. Rabbi Yontif Lippe, what was his last name? Halper. He has a collection of Shadlis of Tshuvas. There's one Tshuva that everybody knows from the Oynig Yontif. He discusses, there's a din if a treifus falls in. One treifus salami gets mixed up with two kosher salamis, and all the labels are removed, and you can't tell which is kosher, which is treif. So the din is that it's bottle beroyv, chas betrei is bottle beroyv. So he has a famous shaila. What if you have strings that were not manufactured l'shem tzitzis, get mixed in with strings that were made l'shma? The strings have to be twined l'shma. So when you say bitl beroiv, does bitl only accomplish that the treifer status is nullified, it loses its original identity in the conglomerate, or does bitl beroiv even accomplish that the roiv will give this a new status to the miyut? So let's say you have a shmura matzah gets mixed in with pshuta matzahs. So you say you have a roiv, you have 25 pshutas and one shmura, and you can't tell which is which. Yet the reverse, you have 25 shmura matzahs and one pshuta matzah. So do you have the right to say bitl beroiv, that the roiv, the 25 shmura matzahs, give the pshuta matzah the status of a shmura? Or maybe you say no, that bitl beroiv only accomplishes to cancel the status that it had before, but it doesn't accomplish to give it a new status. So this is an issue that was discussed by the Prima Gordon. He quotes it from the Minchas Kayan. The Minchas Kayan quotes it. There's a long run in Avodah Zarah. The run has a machlokes. It's a machlokes Rashi and Tosfos and Zvachim. But somehow it became famous when the Einig Yontem. He speaks in Hilchos Tzitzis. He talks about it. He has regular tshuvas al aguna, tshuvas of how to spell names in the get. That's what most of the rabbanim were writing tshuvas about. He's also, the Einig Yontem is also known for the Hakdama and the introduction to the Einig Yontem. He has an original interpretation in the Psukim and Sefer Shmuel that when Shaul HaMelech was instructed by Shmuel HaNavi that he should go wage war against Amalek, and then he allows Agag to remain alive. So Shmuel HaNavi confronts him, he says, Madu al avartas dvar Hashem, why didn't you fulfill the mitzvah? So he says, Ki aresi es ha'om. So he has an interpretation on the Psukim. He quotes a passage from the Talmud Yerushalmi that the few months that David HaMelech was running away from his son Avshalom wanted to kill the father, he wanted to take over the government. So David HaMelech didn't have the din of the Melech at that time. The Melech only has the status of a Melech if he's not afraid of anybody, but if he's in full control. But if he's running away and he's afraid, he's Ois Melech. So that's what Shaul answered Shmuel HaNavi. Ki aresi es ha'om, I all of a sudden became frightened, and I lost my status of a Melech, and the mitzvah Mechias HaMelech is only if you have a Melech. That's how the Gemara says. There are three mitzvahs that have to be fulfilled in a specific order. When the Jews enter Eretz Yisrael, the first mitzvah is Lahamid Lahamelech. Second mitzvah in this order is Lahach V'Zara Shel Amalek. And the third mitzvah in the right order is Libnas Laham Beis HaBchira. So since he was afraid, all of a sudden he became afraid. Ki Aresi Asa'am, I forfeited my status as Melech. And therefore the mitzvah of Mechias HaMalek didn't apply anymore. So that's the Hakdamik to the Eretz Yontif. At the time that he was appointed rabbi, the Eretz Sameach had already gotten married, and he was living, after his wedding, he was living in Bialystok. And he was considered as a candidate for the Rabbanus in the city. People realized and recognized he was a big Talmid Chacham. But he didn't get the position. The Eretz Yontif got the position. So they were friendly together, but they say that the Eretz Sameach, who was later appointed a rabbi by the Misnagdim in the city Dvinsk. The Ragachava was appointed the rabbi by the Hasidim in Dvinsk, and the Osamech was appointed the rabbi of the Misnagdim in the city Dvinsk. So the Osamech made a comment, why didn't they appoint me as the rabbi in Bialystok? I lived there. So he said, when the Klal Yisrael thought that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't come down from Har Sinai after the 40 days and 40 nights, so they thought that Moshe Rabbeinu died. They didn't know what happened to him. He must have died. So they had to appoint someone new as the leader. So they made an Egel Azov. Why'd they make an Egel Azov? Why'd they take Aaron? So the answer is, it makes more sense to take a strange Egel rather than to take the local Aaron. So he said, that's why they appointed Doine Gyantav as the rabbi of Bialystok. He was living there in Bialystok. There was a man who was living there. So rather than appoint him, they appointed the stranger. He felt that he was more worthy. But he used to talk and learning a lot with the Einig Yontif. They were friendly together. One of the historically more famous rabbis in Bialystok was Rabbi Shmuel Mulliver in the late 1800s. He was the one... What? He was the one who spoke to Baron Rothschild. People were always pestering Baron Rothschild to give money to support all kinds of causes. So you had nudniks all day and all night, and you had to come up with something new. Yeah?
Rabbi Zilva. What? It was Zilva. Zilva. It's a famous place for their flat. We're getting close to Zelva, which is a famous place for the, when it was Vat Arba Arzot. This was where Yeridim should take up there. Yeah, there's a lot of rabbinical stories about that.
Regina said that during the period of the Vat Arba Arzot, it was very often the Yeridim would take place in this village in Zelva. And the Rabbanim would have to make a lot of decisions then. So this Rabbi Shmuel, all kinds of things. This Rabbi Shmuel Molliver was a rabbi in Bialystok in the late 1800s, and he approached Baron Rothschild about sponsoring community in Eretz Yisrael. That's when they first started to build up Eretz Yisrael. So he put the bug into his head. Maybe he'd like to support a minion of Orthodox observant Jews who want to move to Eretz Yisrael and make a kibbutz and work Avodas HaKarka. So Rothschild was taken by the idea, and he said, very good. And he said he's going to pay for the expenses for them to travel to Eretz Yisrael. And Shmuel Molliver said he's going to have a minion of 10 men. Originally, the plan was the 10 men would go, and if it works out well, then their wives and their children would come along, and they'd establish the whole yeshiva. So the baron sent his representative to the train station the day that they were supposed to go. And at the train station, there were 11 men. So he said, Hayitoche, and the baron only agreed to pay for the transportation for 10. So they said, no, the reason why they want 10 is because they have to daven tefillah b'tzibur every day. What's going to be if somebody has a cold and he can't come to shul? So if only 10 and one is missing, so he won't have a minion. So they decided they have to have 11, so they have a backup.
So they can also play soccer.
Okay. So the baron was very taken by this, and he said, fine, he's going to pay for all 11. So they went there to Israel and they started a moshav, started a kibbutz, and then they got their wives to come and their children, and everything was going well. And the baron came to visit Eretz Israel, and he saw the way these people would daven every morning to be the bitzibur, then they would learn a little bit after the davening, whatever. I think it was way before the Daf Yomi was instituted. Daf Yomi was instituted by the Levina Rav at the They see Agdol in the early 1900s. So they would learn a little bit, then they would do work all day, then they would change their clothes, and David Mincha Meir was very bekavedik. So he said, it's very respectful, and he gives them permission, the baron gave them permission to name the moshav after his mother. His mother's name was Beatrice, her Yiddish name was Batya. So she had passed away. So he said they should call the moshav Maskeret Batya, and in memory of Batya, because apparently she was a religious woman. So they used to, when they had major shilas, the Balabatim used to correspond with the Rabbanim from Lithuania, because they came from Lithuania. They had a shila of kashrus, they couldn't send a letter and wait to get a response a month later. A shila of a policy, they would correspond to the Rabbanim. So the kashrus shilas, they got used to asking the Badats and Yerushalayim. So then a few years into, I think the third year after they moved there, it's Israel, it was supposed to be Shnas HaShemitah. So the shila was, what's going to be with Shemitah? So the Rabbi Shmuel Molliver, with other Rabbanim in Europe, notified, discussed among themselves the possibility of giving them a heter to work the karka on Shemitah. So they dug up this farm from the 1600s. Some of the Tzvaivish Gedolim came up with this idea of the Hefer Mechira. So they consulted Rabbi Kohanan, who was surprised about this, and then he wouldn't agree to the Hefer until they showed him the Sefer. So they took out the Sefer from a library and they sent it to Rabbi Kohanan. He saw it himself. He signed along also. So they had three prominent Rabbanim, Shmuel Molliver and another two, Rabbi Shmuel Kutner. And the third one was a dying clepfish from Varsha. And then Rabbi Kohanan also agreed. And then they sent this letter to the farmers in Maskeret Batya that if they'll sell the karka to a nachri, they can do the avodas hakarka. So they sent back a response that too late, that they already got so used to asking shilas, the easy shilas of kashrus, the immediate shilas that needed an immediate answer. They got so used to asking shilas of the Badats and Yerushalayim. So the Badats told them, next year Shemitah is coming, and don't listen to anybody who's going to tell you that you can do Avodas HaKarka. You're not allowed to do any Malachas HaKarka in Shnas HaShemitah. So they can't. They accepted the Pesach of the Badats not to do any work during the Shemitah year. So that turned out to be a disaster, because The Baron was upset. The Rabbanim from Europe gave him a heter mechira, and they're not using the heter. They're lazy cons. They're relaxing all year long, not doing any work. And he's supporting them. He's sending them all the money. It's too taxing on him. It's not fair. If they're permitted to do avodas hakakas, so why don't they work? Why should they be lazy? So he refused to pay for the doctor. He used to come every week to visit the moshav to make sure everybody's healthy. I think one of the babies died. One of the babies died that year. And some of the behemoths died also because they weren't taken care of. It was a disaster. So the Vadats told the Balabatim, the 11 families, that when it comes next Shemitah, in another 7 years, they better go for Etim Mechira. But they didn't want to touch it. They were not happy about it. So the Vadat said, go to the Rabbi in Yafo. Rabbi Yafo was a big Talmud Chacham. He was the one, I think his name is Rabbi Tony Hirsch, if I'm not mistaken. He was the one who published the Siddur HaGrola with a lot of Kabbalah in it. They said, go to him and he'll give you, he did the Etim Mechira. So he did for years, until he passed away. And then they took Rav Kook to be the rabbi in Yafo. So it wasn't Rav Kook's idea, the Heter Mechira. The previous rabbi is the one who took care of the Heter Mechira. That was part of the job description. Whoever's the rabbi in Yafo has to take care of the Heter Mechira. But this Rav Shmuel Molliver, the one who encouraged them that they should move to Eretz Yisrael and build up the Yishuv in Eretz Yisrael, he was the rabbi in the late 1800s. He was the rabbi in Bialystok. They always had Rabban and Rabbanim there. I think Rav Moshe Rivkus was the great-grandfather of the Vilna Gaon. He wrote that the Er HaGoyla printed on the side of every page in Shulchan Aruch, which just gives Marmakaimus, general Marmakaimus for the whole Sif. And the Er HaGro, by the great-grandson, assumes that you first read, he's just, the Vilna Gaon just adding on additional Marmakaimus, and he always assumes, he'll always be alluding to what it says in the Be'er HaGoyim. You can't read the Be'er HaGro without reading first the Be'er HaGoyim. And the Vilna Gaon tries to give Marmakaimus for every phrase in the Sif. And the Be'er HaGoyim gives for every Sif generally. The Shach ran away because of the Chamon Nitzki Reis. He never came back, so he died forever. He ran away. Yep. Ran away in the Gzeres Tach V'tat. He mentioned he composed kinnis that they used to recite for Chof Sivim. Chav Sivan was established as a Tainus in the days of Rabbeinu Tam, the days of the Crusaders. But then
he shut off the engine.
We need to shut the engine. It's a regulation.